Ladies and gentlemen, please notice that exits are conveniently located at the front and rear of this auditorium. When leaving the theater, we suggest that the exit at the front of the auditorium will allow you easier access to the parking areas. Thank you.
I don't believe anyone's watching. It says one person watching, and that's me on my laptop.
Nice. Well, Butler, as I'm talking to you, well, this is going to be recorded and put out there anyway, so that's fine.
Absolutely.
For those who don't watch the lead up stuff, I'm coming to you from our destroyed basement. You probably saw the commercial we did, or the little thing I did, the little, hey, well, watch our stuff. That's what's going on back there. That's getting fixed in 2 days.
Nice.
The crack in the basement. And then the room will get built out, and then we'll figure out. You know what I was thinking, Butler? The two poster cases that I have here that are adjustable, I was thinking about moving them into there. So that we can always change the right. So that we can always change the poster depending upon what we're doing. So I thought that would be good too, since we both, I'm sure, have a huge collection of posters.
My trunk in my car is just posters.
Yeah. So I mean, I've got posters from the 90s. So you know, I know I have a Clerks poster. I have a Jurassic Park poster. So I have all those Jurassic Park. I know I have several Jurassic Park Lost World posters.
Ooh.
So I've got. So we've got some good ones that we can shine. So I think having that over there might help us swap it out and stuff. And of course, the one that you want, the Italian
Army of Darkness.
Army of Darkness poster, which will go up. So that'll be sweet to see. So
yeah.
I'm hoping my kid doesn't get scared, but who cares?
Scared ass. Right,
so I guess
abs.
What's up?
Scared ass.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, who isn't? All right. So why don't you, I guess, kick us off and what we're going to do and how this is going to play out.
I don't freaking know.
I'm just trying. Giving you, I talked for 5 minutes.
Yeah. So if anyone is watching, or for the people watching,
they are watching. Home game edition. Watching, nice.
For those watching after the live stream, or for those watching right now, this is our first episode of Now Showing that's kind of our own. Oh, I have to turn my lights off. Too.
Great. Good stuff. Bye, Butler. So I'll do it. So this is our first. So we've done a couple Now Showing episodes before, but they were more for it was a partnership with I can't remember the name of the studio, the production company, excuse me, that asked us to reach out when we were like in the middle of our first couple of years. And we did a movie about the Maserati documentary. We did an episode of that, and we did one about aliens, right?
We did the Wow Signal,
an alien movie,
Maserati.
Yeah. Wow Signal. That's right. So, and we call that Forgotten Cinema Now Showing. So we've always talked about doing this, when we were doing the main show about watching newer movies and talking about them, but like not so long, maybe like a 20, 30 minute show, but not like, the main show, which is we go through all the facts and the numbers and stuff like that. We just kind of talk about our thoughts and stuff like that. But this is different because this is also a combination show, because we're going to do a little bit of Now Showing, and then, as you know, we're coming back for it's season 17, basically. But it'll be our first season of the new reboot, which starts May 1st. But we have yet to pick the films that we're going to cover in those first 13 episodes. So that's going to happen after our Forgotten our Now Showing episode. And we're going to go, basically, you're going to see us doing a lot of this. All right, so I want this, and let's do this. We're just going to be picking. So it's fun. And what's funny, Mike, is that our friend Pat Whalen, who I did the Yet Another MCU podcast with, reached out to me. It was like, are you really doing a live show, or are you like, is it scripted? Like, we had picked these already.
Oh, right.
Live. Cause he's like, I've got suggestions. I'm like, well, send them. So I try to drop like 10 suggestions into the big list. So you'll see them. And it's always like Pat's suggestion. He picked role models. I go, Pat, we did that. So clearly big fan of this show. So I guess we're doing Dune Part 2, because me and you saw it last night, correct?
That is correct. Unless it was some kind of fever dream. I do believe we watched there. Dune Part 2 last night.
We did not drink the water of life, the worm piss, the Mountain Dew, whatever it is, that code. What is that called?
Mountain
Dew. What is that blue drink called? Because I don't go to
LiveWire. I think it's LiveWire.
I have no idea.
Well, Baja Blast is also
that,
green.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking about. Is that green?
Baja Blast is another type of green, a different color green. I think you're thinking of LiveWire, which is their blue one.
As I don't partake in that a lot of that. Butler is probably the bigger Taco Bell Mountain Dew guy, right? So that's not really me.
I don't like Baja Blast, but I do like Mountain Dew.
Oh, really?
And Taco Bell.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I'm probably the only person I've ever met that doesn't like Baja Blast. It just tastes like off Mountain Dew. It's not different enough.
Mm-hmm.
That's so a hot correct.
So last night we saw Dune Part 2 in our local IMAX theater. Actually the place we used to work at. And it was, we were probably with about what, 50 people? 50, 60
people? Yeah, it's a decent amount of people for a Monday.
All dudes. Not all dudes, but it was someone who kept getting up and leaving. Like she left one time and like I'm like, you didn't go long enough to go to the bathroom. You went to go whatever you went to go do and then came back because that was fast. But you know, I always love when they apologize. I'm like, it's fine. I get it. Butler picked ticket seats at the end of the row. So this is what we're doing. This is what we're doomed to do.
Thought you liked the end of the row. Well, I mean, there was kind of slim pickings. Everyone picks the middle, which makes sense.
Now I know. The middle is the best. That's why AMC charges those premier prices for those middle seats. And yeah, no, screw that. All right. So we kind of talked a little bit about this movie after we watched it. We both enjoyed Dune Part 1. I think we've never really talked about it on the show, but we both liked the movie.
Right. Yeah.
What were your, like on the drive home, were you thinking about the movie, or today, were you thinking about the film? Like, what were your, I guess, first takes or initial thoughts or whatever?
I was definitely thinking about the show or the movie, like all night and all day. I think
it was your modern day Empire Strikes Back.
It has appreciated for me over time. I will say, I don't know. I'm going to zoom out a little bit. That's the Dune book behind me, by the way. See that product placement? You're welcome, Frank Herbert.
What is? Isn't he dead?
Yeah, for a while. Since 1985.
Rough Butler. Come on, rough.
That's a tall order. I mean, to call something an Empire Strikes Back is really kind of like, come on.
It's dumb.
But I will say,
whatever. It's fine.
I mean, I
shouldn't say it's dumb.
Denis Villeneuve. As I've been told, that's how I pronounce it. I always use his name. I apologize.
Okay.
His movies are just home run after home run after home run, especially in the sci-fi genre. I've never seen Prisoners.
I was going to say, have you seen all of his films?
Prisoner seems excellent, but it also seems really depressing. So I've seen
it is
great acting from that film in clips, but I don't know if I could watch the whole thing. But I mean, Arrival.
I'll be a baby. Just Blade watch Runner. It.
Arrival, Blade Runner, obviously, Dune Part 1, now Dune Part 2. I think he's got a great handle on what makes great sci-fi. He's obviously got a great eye for the screen, for cinema. I mean, I think, you know, I just keep thinking, that was that one of the best IMAX movies I've watched? And I think it might be. In terms of like...
Really?
For like how... Like when the sandcrawlers are coming through... Not sandcrawlers. The spice harvesters are going through on the sand and... Like you can, and the thumpers are going, you can feel everything that's happening. And there's not one scene that doesn't fill the entire frame, which I, you know, I love when, you know, Christopher Nolan films that one giant scene in IMAX that, you know, the screen all of a sudden goes, "Whoop," but it's also a little distracting. I think because I've watched so many different IMAX films that I really like when one film fills the screen correctly the way it was meant to.
Was this shot with IMAX cameras? Do you know that offhand?
I believe so.
Okay.
At least I know that IMAX is making a big deal out of it. So I think so.
It's just okay. While you said that, I'm trying to think of IMAX films that we've watched.
It's not going to be Tron, because I'm sure you'll put up Tron. And Tron was
I didn't even think of that. But yes, I really like Tron. But we always talk about the opening of Godzilla when the IMAX... The 10 through 1 comes in and it's like you hear Godzilla's roar. I like that. I like Ghost Protocol. I like this. I like when Brad Bird does a post Ghost Protocol when he goes, he's going to walk outside the building for some company. I'm talking about Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. Right. And the screen widens out and he has to walk on the side of that building in Dubai. I liked that part. I mean, that's fine. It's an epic saga. It should fill the screen. It should feel big. So, yeah. That's cool.
But in terms of, I think that the story, you know, it is very well told. It's very well done. I think that while you and I say we like the first one, I think, I mean, I'm sure you're a little bit more of a stickler when it comes to, you know, sci-fi, and I'm a little bit more of an apologist, I think.
Okay.
Dune 1 wasn't perfect. I mean, it was
sure
fabulous in terms of adapting the novel. But in terms of a film, I think there were things that I think we talked about briefly, the stilted dialogue, the lack of action, the lack of kind of, I mean, it sets up the characters, but it doesn't really have much of a plot yet. Mm-hmm. I think that it's all setting the stage, and this one kind of answers it, has a plot through and through. They've less, I mean, what's uncouth the dialogue? I don't know how to say, like, they speak more like human beings do now. It's not like trying to be like highborn speech, which could be a purposeful choice. You know, now Paul Atreides isn't in a noble house. He's on his own. He's with the Fremen. So maybe that was on purpose. There's more jokes. It's a little lighter, even though they're dealing with heavy, heavy themes. And I just think it's a better film. That's definitely got a bigger budget. There were a couple of scenes in the first one I remember, where like the flashback to, or when Paul has his dream where he's a Fedaiken and he does a somersault over the soda car, and then all of a sudden his visor pops up and it's like a copy pasted, like bad Photoshop job of Chalamet on top of this CGI fighter. I thought that every time I see that shot, it's just worse and worse and worse. And I don't think there was any of that in this film. I think you get a shot of Chani doing the kind of the same thing, but it's done much better and it looks real. It doesn't look as shoddy as in the first one.
Right. I was seeing, like, cause you talked about the humor, and I was seeing how there was some criticism for Stilgar being funny, like Javier Bardem's character just kind of being like laughable. People were, you know, like what he was doing. Like his whole undying belief in the Well, that's what I wanted to ask you, that like you don't get that from in the first film, and so are we to think two things? One, are we to think that we just didn't get enough of Stilgar in the first film to really judge what type of person he was in this film, or did they purposely write him differently here? Like I'm because it was a choice. I can't think that they chose to have Bardem play Stilgar the way he played it, not thinking it was funny, or not thinking that you know he's there to lighten the mood, his undying, unflinching devotion to the prophecy. It comes off fanatical, but it also comes off jokingly fanatical. So I'm wondering if that choice was always that way from when they started writing Dune Part One, or it's something they did when they started after the first film and they got into Part Two. What do you think there?
You question Stilgar's motives? You must be Lisan Al-Kaib. Oh my God, it's prophecy. I think it works a bunch of ways. I think having him making fun of it at the beginning makes it kind of worse at the end, when you're like, Oh shit, no, that's not good. Stop, Stilgar. You're doing bad stuff. I think it adds a shock value toward the end of people who maybe don't know the story of Dune and don't know what's going to happen. I think it adds to that. I think that Stilgar in the first film is very much kind of antagonistic. I think there's hints that he thinks Paul might be the chosen one, but there's not a lot. So I think you have to kind of turn that on its head, because in the story, Stilgar is a mentor to Paul and stuff. So you have to, like, all of a sudden go, okay, well now he's with you. So now Stilgar is going to believe. I think that's just kind of like what has to happen.
The Johnny character at the end of the movie, she's the only one that hasn't bought in now, which I find really, like, really only one person out of the million Fremen don't believe. Like, obviously it's because she knows him and she's got a connection with him,
right,
emotionally. But I'm just curious why. And this kind of leads me to my next question. What do you think they end the movie on a shot of her? Like, she's the final shot of the movie, not him, not what's happening, but her. So what am I, or what are we supposed to take from that for going into the next film, knowing that the next film is coming? And why is she the only one that doesn't buy into this?
Well, I think, like you said, she knows him. I think that he's surrounded by, he surrounds himself with his close circle, which are people who now are totally bought into his prophecy. I mean, he kind of is the chosen one. He can do all the things Stigler says, whether or not he's really a god or not is up for debate. But the fact that he has superpowers, you know, is not up for debate. He's reading those people's mind. It's not a parlor trick anymore. But for Chani, she realizes that now, you know, this outsider, colonial outsider, has taken control, which is what she didn't want to happen. And that's not how it is in the books. In the books, she's much more on Paul's side. She stays with him. She's his concubine. She becomes his Lady Jessica. You know, Princess Irulan is just kind of there. She does her empress stuff, and Paul is emperor and duke, but he's got Chani. Chani's who he has kids with. I believe that Chani's who he has kids with. So in this, it's different that she goes off, but you need that kind of person that doesn't buy into it. I think that helps the message of the movie. And I think that Frank Herbert would probably like that, because anybody who says that, you know, Paul is a hero, he talks about how, you know, beware of, you know, sharp tongued prophets. Like, he talked about how Paul Atreides was kind of his answer to, like, JFK. You know, people that promise all this stuff but really are kind of shady, and be like, they're doing it for their own purposes. I think the movie does a good job looking at that, and the push and pull of Paul, you know, not wanting to do that, which from the book, I remember him kind of being a little bit more, all right, this is what I'm going to do to get revenge for my dad. But in this, you get a lot more push and pull from Paul until Paul says it's too late. It's very similar, you know, when people try to make comparisons to things they've seen. I think a lot of modern audiences, I'm surprised no one's made this, is like Doctor Strange with the newest Avengers movie, where he's like, only one chance in a million, and it's the crappy choice where a lot of people are going to have to die, but it's the only way to set the course. And I think as people watch these movies, if they do make, you know, Dune 4, 5, 6, and do the God, books, you're really? Going to see that it's the Bene Gesserit plan is not just like a, all right, everything's going to be better now. It's going to get a lot worse before things get better because of how bad it gets to disrupt the status quo. And I think that this movie does a good job of showing, like, not all heroes are heroes, you know, just because you're rooting for him to do something doesn't necessarily mean it was the right choice or the best choice.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of like the deal with Chani there.
Well, also, I asked like, you this.
Like a, oh, I love you. Kind of just like, ooh, a hag around Chani.
Oh,
it makes her less of that. Fun.
True. I think you probably can't have that with modern day audiences. And that's probably not a plot line that's very interesting. So I can concur with that. I asked you this at the movie when it ended, when we were sitting in our seats watching all the credits, like good moviegoers too.
It's a fantastic score too. So,
yeah. So I asked you this then, but you know what? I totally blanked on what I asked you. Dang it. What did I ask you at the end of the movie? Oh, I know what I asked. Excuse me. His character, I said to you, you know, they set him up to be, because he is. I know you know the books. And
right.
In this movie, they make allusions to that future, but I still don't think they lay it out like it's going to be bad. I think they just say, I think a lot of people will hang on that when he says there's one way to get through this. I think they're going to buy into the fact that, well, maybe that's the good way. Like, if he at the end of the third one becomes somebody of an anti-hero, a bad guy, he can't control what's happening, and he started this, and he can't, and you know what I mean? Like, he's not the hero. Do you think audiences will be cool with that? Do you think that that's something that, like, you know what I mean? Like, do you think that's like a turn in a motion picture where people have not read the books?
Right.
Do you think that that's going to be as successful as if they, you know, they go like a more hero route that they would do?
Well, I'm kind of glad that you started that down this route, because this is something I did want to bring up as well during this, is like, everybody's praising this movie and like loving this movie, but, and no offense to a lot of audiences, and anybody watching Forgotten Cinema obviously is a film lover, so this is not a knock on them, but this is a knock on the general audiences who'd like watch maybe a couple Marvel movies a year, maybe like the big Tom Cruise movie, and that's it. They're not big moviegoers. There's no chance in hell that they all love this movie as much as they're saying. I think for a lot of people, this movie is very highbrow and they don't want to seem stupid. So they're saying, oh, I love this movie, but I'm sure no one could tell you what, when Paul says, send them to paradise, half these people who love this movie don't understand what he's saying. They don't understand what happened at the end of this film. There's no chance. I worked at the theater for almost two decades. You worked there forever. The average moviegoer is dumb. They don't get this movie. There's no way. And then the second movie, when Paul isn't even necessarily the main character in his own movie, there, I'm super looking forward to it because
the next movie. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Because people think this movie is kind of breaking the mold and being a little different. The next movie is going to really, really kind of challenge their perceptions of what a grand epic could be.
Mm-hmm. Well, you hope. We don't know yet.
I hope he sticks with the source material. I can't imagine they're not going to greenlight his third movie at this point. With all
so
the
you want them to be more on par with what the books are. You don't want them to deviate too much. I mean, I know they do make some deviations and we talked about that a little bit.
Right.
For the sake of the story, but you do want them to follow the books more closely.
Yeah, I mean, the books get weird. The movie's already kind of weird. The books get weirder as they go along. But the mm-hmm. second book and the third book aren't too bad. They're not when it gets a little unhinged.
Mm-hmm.
But I do hope they kind of go that route and maybe change things for, you know, the better. Things do get a little muddled and strange as they go. But I think the themes of the book and what they're, the overarching storyline, as long as they stick to the main point, I think will be very interesting to see what audiences think of that. But I think that would have to be like, if Denis says, I don't want to make the fourth one, someone else who's an auteur filmmaker who has that kind of grand sci-fi sensibility as well can carry on that torch and make books, you know, four, mm-hmm. five, six, maybe combine them. You know, I don't think it needs a six movies series, but I think if they do four, five movies, condense some of the books down.
I can't see them doing that. I can see them doing the trilogy and then moving on. I mean, this movie was so expensive. The next movie is going to be even worse. And, you know, they have to make a lot of money to make back that money.
True.
I could see a trilogy, but I can't see them doing beyond, but whatever, you know, maybe a different director, a whole new cast.
I mean, if they do just one more movie, they still don't finish Paul's story quite yet. So they would have to start combining Dune Messiah, which is the next book in the series, and Children of Dune.
Did Austin Butler's character, Fayed Routh, did I say that right? Routha? Fayed Routh?
Fayed Routh? I don't know.
Whatever. Spoiler alert, everybody. Does he die in this, in the books, the way he does here?
Oh, yeah. They have a last sort of fight. Yeah.
Cause he's like a good character. And then it's just like, oh, he's gone. Like Darth Maul and Phantom Menace.
So, well, a lot of people were disappointed he wasn't in the first one because he is in more of the books.
Oh, he's supposed to be in the first one? Oh, okay.
I mean, who knows? The way he like cuts it up. I mean, I don't remember. I mean, it was a little while ago. I reread it before the first movie came out, but I don't remember like any of the planet Harkonnen stuff for the Bene Gesserit. Maybe I remember some Bene Gesserit stuff regarding him. I do know he's kind of like the anti-Paul, but like I don't remember a lot of that planet Harkonnen stuff, which I thought was really cool. Like you said, he's a really cool bad guy. I think the first one they wanted to give kind of Batista's like Raban a chance to shine so they could be like, you think he's bad. Now we got a real, like the opposite of Count Dooku in Star Wars, where it's like, you thought Darth Maul was badass. Wait till you see this 80-year-old man who fences.
Great.
You want to see
this is my Phantom Menace.
You want to see a super zoomed out fight between him and a CGI Yoda?
Oh man. I think I've told this story before, and every time I bring it up, I always like to say it. One of my good friends back in the day, Kevin, rest in peace, man. We watched Attack of the Clones, right? That scene. Yeah. We're watching Attack of the Clones in the cinema showcase, cinema number two, in Orange, the second auditorium packed.
And when Yoda starts fighting and he flips, I laughed like loud. And I was almost, I laughed and I like, I turned to him, and like I laughed right in his face. And he was, he gave me the look like he was going to beat me up. Like he was so upset. And I was just like, all right, chill. I thought it was, I was ridiculous, but you know, he was a huge Star Wars guy. Huge Star Wars guy, and he loved Star Wars, and so that was, it was like his thing. And I remember having conversations with him, being like, "Listen, you can love this stuff. That's fine. That's you. You're always gonna like it. I get it. You know, but I'm not. Like, it's just like I have problems with stuff. I mean, just like I'll always make excuses, and I'll always love Indiana Jones. I don't care if people hate any of the movies. I mean, I still like them, and I'm unapologetic about that. And I tell people when they're like, "Oh, you think that movie's good, Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. We talked about all the time. Right. People are just like, I can't believe you liked it. I'm like, I'm not fighting you. Listen, I like it. You can hate it. That's fine. I don't care. I still like it. And you can have your opinion. I can still have mine. I don't care. And they don't like that. They're like, well, like, I know you want to argue with me about it, but I'm not going to argue with you.
To be sad. I want to beat you up about your movie.
I did. When I did an episode with The Pint, we did, was it Triple T? Was that what it was for?
I think
that we did an episode about it, and that I said, okay, John, I said, for that episode, I will write down, I will produce my, my reasoning for everything. I will answer all those questions. So I did it one time, and I mean, I came prepared for that. And, but that's it. After that, I'm just like, I like it. I don't want to. And yes, I like Dial of Destiny, so I don't want to hear it either. So enough's enough. Done. Right.
I haven't met one person who actually didn't like Dial of Destiny in person. Anyway, I know a lot of people on the internet, but like everyone goes, did you watch the Indiana Jones? What did you think? Yeah, I kind of like, they wait for me to say I liked it. And then they're like, yeah, I kind of liked it.
Just like it. Just say you like it. Who cares? Yeah. Anyway. So, you said you liked this film, but like you haven't really given me something in this film that you really didn't connect with. So you're saying this film is not the perfect, but you just know this film is basically one of the better films you've seen in quite some time. I'm talking about Dune Part Two. I've taken this tangent back to Dune Part Two.
In terms of like sci-fi, I don't know if you remember when I saw Blade Runner 2049, like I was like, dude, this movie's so good. And you were like, calm down.
That sounds like me.
For Blade Runner, it was like, right away. I was like, oh man, this is great. For Dune, because it's long, it's even more heady than Blade Runner. It took me a little while. Like I liked it, but now the more I think about it all day, I'm just like, yes, I really like this film. It's a type of sci-fi that you don't really get ever. I mean, it's really only exists in books. Maybe some video games will do heavy sci-fi, but most of them, you know, by the nature of what they are, can't handle the story like this. I can maybe think of one example of that. It took 3 or 4 games to make that story. I think that this is in a class of its own. I don't think it's fair to compare it against Empire Strikes Back. It's not.
I understand why people do that, because it's easy to let people know how much they love it, because they're quoting or they're mentioning a movie that is revered by everybody. I get why you do that, but I won't personally do that, but I understand why people do that, because it's just to let you know, like, listen, this is how much I like this movie.
And I think in terms of like modern blockbusters, I mean it had the action. I love the way they handled the action. I love the way it was mixed with the story. I absolutely love the cinematography. I think the soundtrack was very, very good. I was listening to it today actually while doing some stuff. I think it's a little less out there than the first one, and it's more palatable. It's definitely really, really good. And I think Hans Zimmer just won the Oscar for Oppenheimer. He just won a couple days ago.
You're right. Yeah. I should know that. Sorry.
Obviously,
did very well.
Yeah. Obviously Hans Zimmer knows what he's doing. I think the soundtrack helps. I really like this movie, but again, I really love sci-fi. So kind of I'm a little bit more of a sci-fi apologist, because you don't get a lot of space sci-fi anymore. And I mean, I really love space sci-fi. So I don't know what you're a little bit more of a stickler when it comes to stuff like this. You don't have that. Like you said, with Star Wars, like space sci-fi isn't necessarily the thing where you're going to hang your hat on and be like, this is it, let's go. What did you think about it?
So when I watched the first film, and we saw it in the theater, I was like, oh, that's good. But then when it was on TV, but it was on HBO Max or it was on HBO, and I would just flip it on, I just watch it and I would watch a couple of stuff. And I kind of was like, all right, I kind of like this movie a lot. You know, I was into it. I dug it. I guess Dune grew on me. I thought Dune Part One was a good movie. It was a really good movie. It grew on me more when I was at home, you know, at home watching it. So that's where I took that there. Dune Part Two, I only saw it once. And I really think that one of the reasons we started the podcast, the Forgotten Cinema podcast, one of the reasons why I like doing the podcast is we're able to go revisit films that I maybe saw once or twice that I never saw again or I never watched again. And, you know, sometimes they don't hold up. Sometimes I'm just like, maybe, you know, I don't know. This doesn't work. Maybe I didn't realize why stuff didn't work. So I think with Dune Part Two, I need to see it again. My first takes were like, it felt like, and these aren't negatives. These are just what my feelings about the film. I'm not trying to be negative.
Okay.
Because I'm giving you like in the first one, it's kind of like an origin story, right?
Sure.
Atreides gets there. Okay. And in the second one, it's almost still like an origin story because now he has to become part of the Fremen. And now we have a montage of him fighting with the Fremen and stuff like that. So like now we're learning about them. So there was like, I thought it was interesting that you have a sequel to a film that is in essence, another origin story a little bit. So you almost had like you're repeating the same storyline, which is, I can't think of a movie in a sequel that was like that. I'm not saying I don't like that. I just thought it was very interesting that it's almost like, it's very similar to what we just watched. And so I think maybe that helped me get into the movie a little bit more, like, but it was also like Fremen heavy in like the first 45 hour. It was just all for him and the Fremen and you kind of got bits and pieces. And then all of a sudden the big world stuff started happening, Plant Harkonnen and all that stuff and all like the politics and the emperor and all that stuff. Then we started getting all that other stuff coming in. So it was almost like there's big chunks. Like the movie was almost put together like chunks of plots and storylines. And I think it was done well, but there's just so much that I want to watch it again to really, really like, just kind of like, okay, how much do I like this film? Like that kind of thing. I'm not ready to be like, this is the best movie of the year or something like that. But I'm just, I want to see it again because what I watched, I enjoyed. But I think any movie that you really love or any movie that you really hate, you should watch it more than once because you just like, you want to know why, like, why did you love this film so much? And I'm the whole fight at the end is great. The whole battle, even though it's all CGI, you know, that's all done well. The music's done well. When they pop out of the sand, you know what I'm talking about? When they start running, the guys are running away and the Fremen, the digital Fremen start popping out of the very end.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they start running. I'm like, I'm sorry, but that score had to be from Dark Knight. Like that felt like a Dark Knight Rises like moment where it was like, boom, 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 boom. And then just come up. I thought that was really good. I enjoyed that.
That's one part of the movie I wasn't a huge fan of.
Oh, really?
When they that pop out scene only or just because the end. How did they get under the sand there?
It doesn't make sense.
Them, no,
it doesn't
without make them sense. Seeing them. They're right in
there's
front
a couple, of things. There's a couple moments like that, which is why I want to rewatch it. There's a couple moments with the geography of what's happening. I'm just like, that doesn't make... I'm not following that. And it wasn't like that's dumb. It was just that I'm not following how that's happening. I need to see this again. And to be fair, a lot of filmmakers will do stuff like that. They'll piece stuff together. Go back and watch. I just talked to how I love Indiana Jones, but go back and watch some Spielberg stuff where he's done the action. The action sometimes doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. Like all of a sudden he's in the woods and then all of a sudden he's in the desert, like stuff like that. Like it doesn't make sense, but you're into it. So it doesn't matter. So there was stuff like that. Like you're talking about, like, I just didn't understand the geography of like, how did they end up there all of a sudden? Like, why is he there? I don't get that. I thought he was back there. Like, so yes, absolutely. There was stuff like that in this film that I want to see it again to figure it out.
So before I burn my nerd cred, I said the planet, it was Planet Harkonnen. It's Giedi Prime is the Harkonnen's home planet.
I didn't even call it Planet Harkonnen, dude.
You did.
I said Harkonnen. I said the Harkonnen. Nope. I didn't. I knew.
Giedi Prime is their home planet. So
that's your thing, man. You suck.
I've corrected my thing. The second thing is when you were talking about how it's like two origin stories, do you think that's kind of similar to how in Star Wars, Luke is kind of the first one is his introduction to the rebellion and his second one is his introduction to the Jedi?
You mean like when he's with Yoda?
Right.
That stuff in Empire.
Yeah, I
guess, but here's the difference. I still think the Dagobah scenes are boring in Empire.
I forgot you don't like the Dagobah.
And I still think the movie's great, but I always hate that. I'm so bored with those scenes. When I was a kid, they bored me. And when I'm older, I'm like, get to the action.
What a Yoda hater.
No, I just think they're boring. That's all. It's fine. I want Han Solo and all that stuff. I want the, I want the Cloud City fight. I want that.
You'll get the green Muppet and you'll love it.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, I guess you're right. I guess that's your point is valid. Yeah.
I was trying to invalidate. I just, when you were saying it, I was like, that kind of reminds me of this.
It is. Yeah. It is. Yeah. But I think that's I think maybe because I'm thinking of the montage. I'm thinking of just because it starts right after the first film, and then all of a sudden he's got to learn the Fremen ways, and then they montage it and he's part of them and he's building rapport, and it's over a long stretch of the movie. So I think that's why I was like, this feels like an origin story. This feels like his origin story in terms of when he becomes part of the Fremen and one of them and stuff like that. So that's where I was at with that. So, but I understand what you're saying. Burning that nerd cred. All right. So I don't want to go too long. We both like the movie. We both talked about, is there anything that we haven't talked about that you wanted to bring up or you wanted to kind of discuss?
I love how they get rid of the thumpers. Just like it's some advancement.
I think that's everybody says that.
Just all these thumpers are getting lost. Like they've got to have 3D printers in their backpacks. I think I told you in the theater, like it's so ridiculous. And I mean, it's like that in the book too. You never hear them the thumpers back up, but
the thumpers are so crucial. You think that those are a heavily traded commodity amongst the Fremen. You know what I mean? Like if you need a thump around a thumper, it's like, well, man, there's only one way you're going to get one. Like they must be a heavily traded,
got to go
pricey commodity. Yeah, what a thankless job making thumpers that that you'll never see again. I mean, never see again.
It's a job.
unless they know where those worms crap and they find thumpers in their crap everywhere, because
thumpers, the crap is the spice.
Is that really? Oh, you're that's right. The and maybe the, well, they'll eat anything though. So
that's true.
Do they explain, not to get off topic, but in the books, do they explain how spice, how they use it to travel? Like, do they explain that process at all? Or they just say spice?
That's one thing the movie doesn't talk about at all. So the movie is definitely Denny purposely leaves out the Mentats, who's the guy who turns his eyeballs white in the first movie. He survives in the book. And he's just a prisoner of the Harkonnen. So he comes back at the end. Mentats are like living computers because there was a war in their past, which is not too far from our future, where AI took over. So they don't use AI. They have human computers, basically. And then there's spice can really mutate you if you take too much of it and you become a navigator. And these are mutated, disgusting, alien looking humans. They're basically not human anymore. They're like another species of alien. And the spice opens their mind so much they can read star charts and plot a course through hyperspace where they're not going to hit a rock or an asteroid or a planet. And you need the spice to travel. That's how they do it without AI and stuff. Are these gross, mutated, giant, ugly things. But the movies, I was really hoping to see one in this movie. I totally forgot, which it's to the credit of the movie that I forgot. But I was really looking forward to seeing what they would think those would look like.
So spice is like Star Trek's the lithium crystals. Is that what you're telling me?
In a way, but it unlocks people's minds.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And mutates you if you take too much. Yeah.
And Arrakis is the only planet that has it.
That has spice because it's the only planet that has sand where sandworms can survive. Yeah.
Nobody thought to take a baby sandworm and take it to another planet where there's desert.
They can. They don't survive.
Really?
That's the whole plot of the upcoming books, because Paul has promised the Fremen, I'm going to turn Dune into a tropical paradise. And, you learn what terraforming Arrakis is going to do to the sandworms, which is going to ruin space travel and cause all sorts of problems.
Cool. That's in the next movie, you think? That's what you're saying?
That is not in the next
one. That's in the other book. That's okay. Yeah. Okay. So, okay. All right.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. So, I mean, I think this went well. I like this. I like talking about a newer film, not having us about the facts.
Yeah, it's a little different. I like it.
I know our next one is going to be Frozen Empire, right? We're doing the next Ghostbusters one. Is that it?
No, I think.
Or is it Roadhouse?
Roadhouse was going to be our next one, and then Ghostbusters.
Right.
They come out so like close to each other, but I think it'll probably be Roadhouse and then Ghostbusters. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Roadhouse, Ghostbusters.
I think we talked about Godzilla. Doing the Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Oh, Godzilla. Yep.
Godzilla on the Planet of the Apes. Planet of the Apes will be a lead up into an out showing.
Yeah, and we did an episode of Roadhouse for our lead up as well. The Patrick Swayze one, which we already watched and recorded, so that'll be on the Patreon as well. I guess I know we're gonna go into our second set, but why don't our selection show, if you will, of season 17. But right. Before we go, why don't you I guess do our little Patreon pitch and also do you know the usual stuff that you like to do.
So thank you guys who are Patreons. Thank you guys who are returning viewers who watched our show before we took our little hiatus.
I took it, apparently. Yeah.
That's right. It's called controlling the narrative field.
Shut up.
before our rebirth. And thank you for watching to new viewers, because YouTube's kind of new for us. Before we just had the audio, this is all kind of newish, the video stuff. This live stream was available to the public. I think a lot of a few of the live streams, the next few live streams are going to be probably at least until we start season 17, which is our next season, May 1st, just to have people kind of jump on the live streams and see what it's like. See if you like it. If you like it, then once we bring it over to the Patreon, you can join the Patreon tier that has live streams. I believe it's the third tier. And then you can, you know, join in, chat with us. You know, I've got my laptop open here. I'm watching both the StreamYard and YouTube channels, trying to see if anybody's talking to us about what they thought of the movie. And we'll put this episode out probably the next day or the day after for everybody. So if you didn't catch the live stream version of this, you're probably watching what we've recorded and put out. So thank you for watching that. We got more content coming at you. If you like what you see, join the Patreon. It really helps. A lot of the stuff, you know, we want to keep making this bigger and better. We want to build a community around films in a way that I don't think either of us have really seen online to the degree where we'd like to do it. So if you join, you get into our Discord group. We'll have to talk movies. We do these live streams, you know, all that kind of stuff to help build the community and build the Forgotten Cinema brand through Patreon. And that's all I got. I really want those anti-gravity suits from Dune.
That you have to poop in?
The ones where you could like jump off and then you just slowly.
Oh, go yeah. Okay. I'll work on that.
All right. Thanks. So, yeah, that's all I got.
Awesome. Yeah. Sweet. See you around. I know we're not going anywhere. I just know you're, what's up.
Well, we should still do.
Oh, you want me to do?
Cause there's not a season selection to it. Yeah.
All right. Fine. All right. Okay. So I'm Mike Field.
I'm Mike Butler.
And this has been Forgotten Cinema, now showing Dune Part 2.